Good morning, Good Life. I'm so excited to be back here sharing with you guys. Last week, Ryan did an awesome message about knowing Jesus, and he asked me if I would follow up and talk about trusting Jesus. And it was so exciting to prep this message. I was really not sure what to do, and so I ended up sitting down and opening my Bible up to the table of contents and just looking at all the books of the Bible. And as I did that through the lens, asking the question of who in the Bible was really good at trusting God, the next few hours were just so much fun as I visualized these conversations that God had with people in the Bible, and their response was unbelievable trust. And so I'm going to share just a few of those, and what I was doing was I was visualizing the conversation. So for example, the first guy I thought of, the first one in Genesis that came to mind, was Noah. And so you've got Noah, he's hanging out, he's having a good day, and God says, Noah, I need you to build a boat about the size of a footy field, and then I need you to just go get a couple of every animal and put it on the boat. And Noah's like, all right, why? And God says, well, I'm going to basically wipe out the earth and start again. So Noah's like, okay, I trust you. It doesn't make much sense, but I'll do it. And the ensuing months, I forget how long he was building that ark, but he just did every single day. Noah acted in trust, even though he looked totally insane. The next person I thought of was Abraham. Abraham's hanging out, and God, he's enjoying this child, Isaac, that they waited 25 years for. And then God shows up and says, hey, Abe, you know that kid that you had waited 25 years for and that your wife had miraculously after she went through menopause? Remember that kid? Yeah, I need you to go up a hill and kill him. So Abe's thinking, huh, okay, I trust you. That doesn't make any sense, but I trust you. And we know what happens later is he goes up the mountain and he's about to sacrifice his son, and God stops him, and he's honored for his trust. And God wanted to make sure that Abraham didn't love the gift more than the giver. Then I flipped in the next, after we got through the Pentateuch, the next table of contents book I saw was Joshua. And God goes to Joshua and says, hey, mate, you see that huge city of Jericho that is surrounded by massive walls that they can ride a chariot around? Yeah, take the army and just keep marching around the city 7 times. It's going to take ages, and they're going to laugh at you the whole time, but just do that. And Joshua's thinking, okay, that's pretty weird. Just walk around the city 7 times. And I picture that walk. I'm wondering, okay, if I'm a soldier and I'm following Joshua doing this walk, and all these people are on the wall throwing eggs at me, laughing at me, you'd feel so stupid. But every single step that they took was just an act of trust when it made no sense. And they just trusted and they just kept walking. And then at the end of the 7th walk around the city, they blew on their trumpets and boom, those walls just crumbled because they trusted God. Then I flipped into the prophets, and the prophets was where it just got gnarly. Hey, Isaiah, mate, I need you to walk around naked and barefoot for 3 years. Can you do that for me? Oh, okay. Why? Just, can I ask why, Lord? Do I need to be naked? I got a dad bod. And God says, well, you're going to be an enacted symbol. You're going to be a picture of what's going to happen to the Egyptians who the Israelites are trusting instead of me. So that's going to happen to the Egyptians. So you can just be a word picture. So Isaiah, for the next 3 years, it's just walk. He gets up. I mean, he saves a lot of money on clothing. He gets up, and he's just wandering around the city naked and barefoot. And like you, for 3 years, you have to have a reputation. Like, I live in Majimba. If I walked around for like a week or two, people would know there's the crazy naked guy. But for 3 years, naked and barefoot, just to trust God. Another story in the gospel is Jesus just walking and he sees these boys out fishing. They've been fishing all day, all night, haven't caught anything. He goes, hey boys, just put your nets on the other side of the boat. And they're thinking, what are you on about? We've been here all night, haven't caught a thing. But one of them's just like, you know what? I trust you. And puts his nets on the other side of the boat, you know, a meter away from where they were, and boom, sushi for days. The boat was just overwhelmed, it was about to sink. There were so many fish, it was unreal. And so I started just pondering on each one of these amazing men and women in the Bible who trusted God, and God asked them to do something crazy. And their response was trust, even though they didn't understand. So my question to you is God asking you to trust Him when it doesn't make sense to you? There's this verse in Proverbs 3, it says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him and He will make straight your paths. And so you can't trust your own thoughts. You can't trust yourself. You have to lean into Him and trust Him even when it doesn't make any sense. So is God asking you to trust Him when things don't make any sense right now? So after I'd gone through the table of contents, looking at all these legends that had been asked by God to do something really weird, I had the thought, When was a time that God had asked me to do something weird that I had to trust Him even though it didn't make any sense? And I thought of this time where it was 2 weeks before we had a school starting, the School of Biblical Studies. We had 40 students arriving and I get this notice and it was from our real estate agent and it says, notice to vacate all properties immediately. And they were all owned by the Department of Main Roads and we had 4 houses in a row. And they were going to put a road through there, and so they told us to leave. And we had 2 weeks notice, but we had a school starting in 2 weeks. So it was a crisis. We had all these people coming, no housing. And so I remember I applied for about 30 houses on the coast, any 4 or 5 bedroom house I could. I just was applying for whatever we could. And at the same time, there's a conference in Townsville that I was supposed to go to that afternoon. And I thought, oh, surely I just won't go to Townsville. When I prayed about it and God said, go to Townsville. And I was thinking, why the heck would I go to Townsville? We're in a crisis. So then I go to my boss at the time and I said, hey, mate, I feel like God's telling me to go to Townsville. And he's like, mate, you can't go. You're in a crisis. You have no housing. You've got 40 people arriving. You can't just leave. So then I went back and we prayed with my staff team and my wife and we all just felt like I was supposed to go to Townsville. And I love my leader, I respect him a lot, and I said, mate, I don't know what to do here. I feel like I need to go to Townsville, and you're saying no. What would you need to see happen for you to be okay with me going to Townsville? He said, well, if you get at least 2 houses, you can go to Townsville. And my flight was that afternoon. And so I had applied for all those houses, and my flight's at 3:30, and I end up driving to Brisbane in faith. So I'm driving to Brisbane and I'm just waiting for phone calls from agents. And the deal was I don't get on that plane unless I have 2 houses approved already. And so I drive to Brisbane and I'm with a bunch of other people that are going to the conference and they all check in and they all said, good luck, we'll be praying for you. And they all leave. And I go to the woman at the counter. I said, when's the last second I can check in? And she said, well, actually the flight was at 4. She said, 3:00 is the last second you can check in. And so I wait and I'm just standing and pacing back and forth by the baggage, just praying. And I get a phone call. I've been approved for a house and it's like, you know, 2:50, right before 3:00. And I call my boss. I'm like, I got a house. And he says, yeah, the deal's 2. And I said, I know, I'm just keeping you updated. And so I hang up all irritated. And then I go back and I'm pacing and I'm praying and 3:00 comes and I see the woman about to, you know, close up shop or whatever. And I go up there kind of as an act of disobedience. And I said, hey, can I still check in? And she says, nah, sorry, the flight's closed or whatnot. And I'm just so defeated, so bummed. I walk back to my car or walk back to the domestic airport parking lot. I go up, I take my backpack off, put it in my car. I get in my car, I'm closing my car door. And I hear a whole bunch of fire alarms, like a ton of fire alarms just going off, and it's just like evacuate, evacuate, fire, fire, evacuate, evacuate, fire, fire, and it's just chaos ensues. So I open my door back up, and I'm like, this is interesting. I go and I get my backpack, and I walk back in, and they are evacuating the whole Brisbane domestic airport. And they're all out there in the parking lot. Everyone's angry. Everyone's stressed. You know, kids are crying. Like, it's just mayhem. And as we're standing out there, it took about 45 minutes for them to sort out the fire. And as we're standing out there, I get a call. Hey, you've been approved for a second house. I'm like, jackpot. So then I call my boss. I'm like, hey, we just got a second house. And he's like, good on you, mate. Have a good trip. We'll see you in 4 days. But my flight had left. And so I go and I use a pretty clever tactic that's served me well when you're in a crisis. You go and you find the staff who looks the most stressed out and is the youngest. And so I get in this poor girl's lineup, and she looks like she's in tears. Everyone's angry. It's just chaos. And I'm standing there. I'm really polite. I'm like, hey, I just need to get on my flight to Townsville. And she's like looking me up, and she's like, that flight already left. She's like, oh, she's like, there's one in an hour. Oh, it's full. Oh, here we go. There's one in first class, seat 1A. And she's like, here's some food and drink vouchers. Have a great flight. Sorry about all this. I'm like, no worries. And I go, and I remember sending a selfie to my boss and me in first class. And that was awesome. In Townsville, when I was there, I made some relationships that were really, really important. We've done a lot of work together since, and it was just a time God did something crazy when it didn't make any sense, but we had to trust Him in that. So then I went back to looking at the table of contents, and a few men stood out to me of guys that really knew God. And therefore, they trusted Him when life kind of fell. When life happened, their response was trust because they knew Him so well. And the first guy was David. And David's just a young guy. He's a shepherd. And he hears about this giant that's smack-talking the God of the Israelites. And he says, nah. There's no way you can do that. And so he goes and says, yeah, I'll take him on. You can't mess with Yahweh. You can't say that about Him. And so he goes and he collects a few stones from the creek, and he goes and he just with a slingshot sinks a rock into the giant's forehead, drops him, takes out his sword, cuts his head off. And it's just this incredible story, David and Goliath, that we all know. But yet, deep down, David was a man that just trusted God because he knew Him, and he knew what he was capable of, and he knew that the creator of all this was behind him. And he said, you can't smack talk Yahweh. And the next person I was looking at was Job. Job had the worst day. So Job's hanging out. Then someone runs and says, hey, Job, the Sabians, they've just killed all your servants. And it says, before that guy had finished his sentence, another guy comes and said, hey, there's fire from heaven and it killed all of your sheep. And then another guy comes saying, hey, the Chaldeans, they've just killed all your camels. And Job's processing like all that. And then another guy's like, hey, this big wind came and knocked the house down and all your kids are dead. And Job's like, what? And then all of a sudden Job gets covered in boils. And to top it all off, his awesome wife is like, hey, Job, just curse God and die. It's like, thanks, honey. That's really helpful. And he just has this horrible day where he just loses everything. And it says, in all this, Job did not sin. He trusted God, even though he was facing the worst day, worse than any of us have ever faced. But yet his response was trust. It said he did not sin. And the third final guy I was looking at was Daniel. And Daniel was a teenager. He was living in Jerusalem, and the Babylonians came and ripped everybody out of Jerusalem and took them as prisoners of war and had to hike them 1,100 kilometers, like from here to Sydney, hiked everyone over to a different country. They put him into the University of Babylon where they re-educated him, giving him a degree in demonology, and they made him a eunuch. You can Google that later. And they made him a vegan. And like, it just, he had to go through this incredible season of losing everything. And yet Daniel was known for being a man of trust and of integrity and of intense character. And so most of us stress about where to live and what to do and where to go, and Daniel didn't have any of those options. Daniel had no say in where he lived, no say in what he did, but yet the one thing that he did have a say in was trusting God and his integrity no matter what. And God continued to use Daniel and to bless Daniel for his incredible trust and integrity. And so I think of these guys, and each one of them, their response was trust because they really knew Yahweh. They were, each one of them were known for being a man of prayer, a man that sought the presence of the Lord. And so as we seek God, we'll learn to trust Him more. Just like any relationship, the more you know someone, the you know their character, their heart, the more you can trust them. Just like when you pursue Jesus, you'll be able to trust Him more when things don't go as according to our plans. And the last thing I want to share was also from the book of Daniel. And there's this famous story of the fiery furnace in Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, or if you watch VeggieTales, Rakshak and Benny. And so King Nebuchadnezzar, he got an A+ in self-esteem class, and he made a 90-foot golden statue of himself. And when all the band plays, everyone had to bow down and worship this statue. So you just picture this. It's on the plains, so it was a big flat area. The music plays, and everyone, hundreds of thousands of people, just bow down. Then you have these three dudes just standing there, nope, not going to bow down. So listen to what King Nebuchadnezzar says to these boys. It says in chapter 3, verse 15 of Daniel, "Now if you're ready, when you hear the sound of all the instruments, fall down and worship the image that I have made. But if you do not worship, you shall be immediately cast into the burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands?" And Rakshak and Beni, they say to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter." We actually don't have to answer you. "If this be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. He will deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." So they tell him, he can, he is able to deliver us. He will deliver us. But even if he doesn't, we're not going to bow down. We're going to trust him. And I don't know what situation you're going through, but I believe He can deliver you. I believe He will deliver you. But even if He doesn't, trust Him and worship Him. So after Job has his gnarly day where he's lost everything, there's about 30 chapters where his friends are giving him bad advice, trying to explain why he's suffering. And then at the very end of the book, God appears and says, "Job, stand up. I'm going to ask you some questions." And God asks Job 63 rhetorical questions based around creation. He says, "Job, do you put the stars in the sky every night? Because I do. Hey, Job, do you bring the tides up and then push the tides back every day? Because that's my job description. Hey, Job, do you help deer? Do you help deer give birth? Are you a deer doula? Because I am." And he just quizzes Job on the magnificence of creation and how God does all this and puts Job in his place. And Job never learns why he suffers, but Job continues to trust him because he is God and we are not. No matter what you're going through, I don't know what you're going through. I think he can deliver you. I think he will deliver you. But even if he doesn't, you have to trust him because he is God and we are not. And it says in Isaiah that his ways and his thoughts are higher than our ways and our thoughts, and that we're called to trust him. So he can deliver you, he will deliver you. But even if he doesn't, trust him. He's a good, good father.